What's up, guys? Welcome back to episode 3 of the World 360 Pod. I'm doing well, Steve. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing well, too. Thanks for asking, Brooks. Claw, how are you doing this week?
Good. Chilling, excited for the draft coming up on this upcoming Thursday.
All right, so this week we decided to move away from our Would You Rather segment, but we're still going to start you off with a hypothetical. And this hypothetical comes from our good friend and listener, Jerry. And it is, would 6 Brooks Brazos, so a guy who's in college who is 5'8", 155, so 6 total Brooks, would they be able to take down Conor McGregor, who's most of his fights 5'9", 155, would 6 Brookses be able to take down McGregor in an octagon setting? What do you guys think?
Yes. Bottom line, the way I see it is 6-on-1. Like, if you give me 3, like, if it's 3-on-1, McGregor all day. 4-on-1, McGregor all day. But once you get into 5 and 6, he's just outnumbered at that point. Like, you can't punch 6 people at the same time. You can't kick 6 people at the same time.
Okay.
You have 2 hands, 2 feet. You can take 4 max. Well, you have still 2 guys. I mean, plus if it's the UFC, you can tackle the guy. And plus, once in the event that McGregor's tackled or anybody's tackled, they're at a disadvantage, and they're kind of, I mean, it's like Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. Well, let me have 3 of my Brookses get punched in the face. Well, I have the other two tackle him, and boom, the other. Like, then you still got 5 guys sitting there. You still got 6 guys. It's 6-on-1. It's
just a math equation. Can I ask you what your strategy to take him down? Are you having him in the middle, your guys circling him, or is he in a corner, 6 guys in a line, waves of 3, 4, and 2, 2-2-2?
In order to be most effective, I think you just – because my whole thing is you have 6 guys, go use them all at the same time.
Yeah, I just want to hear what your strategy is so that I can respond to your strategy.
I mean, we could do it both ways. Like, if he's in a line – well, I mean, either way, I'm kind of just going 6. I'm just going for it. I'm just sending it 6-on-1 kind of thing.
See, I think if all 6 guys are going 6-on-1, I don't see guys just nosediving at his legs. Like, I think you're at least running to the point where – you're getting in close enough range to get to his 3.5, 4-foot arm span where he can quick throw a punch, boom, you're down. You're not having guys go tuck and roll
at
his
legs. He can't do that. That's like 6 at the same time.
But
his body mass is
only so small that like everybody has to converge at one singular point. So they get close enough where he could just go like this.
Well, I would have to get close enough anyway. So I'm just going to have all 6 and we're just going to overwhelm them.
But like what Steve is saying, 6 guys can't all actually hit him at the same time.
Sure they can. They just go like – you just go. It's like a game tackle in football.
And he's going to be hitting back. Like, yeah, it's not like
he's just standing there.
Yeah, like
6 guys run at him at one time. All 6 can't like – just the area of the 6 guys at once is not – like they won't all be able to punch him at once, and one if like
well he can't he can't punch all 6 guys at once either, which is what I'm saying. Like it's a 6
okay, but
on
I'm
one.
Saying I'm also saying that no offense, I think all anybody's punch that has not formally fought or been taught how to fight, your punch is just going to be irrelevant to McGregor.
But he's still going to feel it. It's still going to make an impact. Plus, it's six people.
I really don't.
They're just not going to feel it at all.
I have watched him endure a 5-round, 5-minute fight against Nate Diaz, who is
one of the scariest people.
But hold on. It's one person.
But your point was just that he's not gonna like his. Your punches aren't gonna affect him. They're not.
They're like.
But
that's a fly tag.
It's still 6 people. Say he punches 2 people at the same time, you still have 4 people who are standing there who can go get him.
You act like
it's a 6-on-1. I'm not saying he's not. It's still a 6-on-1.
Dodged by him.
Who says I can't dodge? I'm shifty.
You're not dodging a McGregor.
No, that's just not happening. Pro guys
don't dodge his left.
I literally think that if he gave one blow straight onto your nose, broken nose, you're down. Ambulance coming and rushing
in. But that's what you guys keep saying. But what I'm saying is, he does that to one person. He can only punch.
He needs to throw a total of six punches, and he needs to dodge probably three. Because by the time
I'm not punching him. Why would I go punch him? You're right. That puts me at a disadvantage.
What do you do when you get him to the ground?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I just don't think it's getting to the ground because he's knocking two guys out before you guys even know what's going on. So
how do we not know what's going on?
He's just that quick and that skilled. Like you're just,
No, we're all in the setting.
Brooks, listen to me here. You say that you guys are going to go wrap him on his legs. If a guy is on his leg right here and he's standing, he literally just has to go like this.
Yeah.
And
he can just hammer punch
the back of your hand. I still have his one leg. His punch to the leg takes up a leg and a hand, so now he's got an arm and a leg for five people.
I'm just saying, I think you're underestimating what he will do to you guys. I think he still has a ring. It's not like he's staying sturdy here. He can run around like this, and he's gonna just go boom back away.
Yeah,
like he's gonna pick his poison, and he's gonna go.
Not if we all go six at the same time.
What I'm saying is, he's quicker than you. He will be
not quicker. Six people. He's not. You can't focus on six people at once.
You can. Yeah, he's not going to focus on six at once. He's going to pick what guy. He's going to pick a guy and say, "Okay,
right." He's going to pick a guy. There's still five other people.
Okay, so say there's one more guy in between you and Claw right now, who are about 6 feet apart, right?
Right. Proper social distance.
Yes. So you're 6 feet apart. There's a guy there, and I'm choosing. I have 10 feet behind me in the octagon, and I'm going Claw, boom. What are you two? When I'm just this motion,
that's when we close in.
I'm saying that
when he
punch and then kick immediately after.
Like you're acting like you can't go like that.
You can't reach. He's not a robot. He doesn't need to recharge his kicks.
And you're acting like he doesn't have quick feet to go like this and back up.
Like, right, but when he encroaches in on the one person, he punches him. Say he backs away. I still have at a minimum three people going and trying to like tackle him and take him down, which is my whole strategy.
I think it's absurd that you think that you will be able to take down one of the most
six. Deadly- it's not just me; it's six of me
who's never fought, who's never taken a real punch. He could punch you in the gut, and you wouldn't be able to get up. Oh, you would literally be down and not be able to fight.
Right, he punches a maximum of two people at the same time. There's still what you guys are just failing to understand is that it's a 6-on-1.
No, we understand.
I don't think you understand that he knows how to move around an octagon and he knows how to.
No, I understand that. I'm just telling you from a purely numbers standpoint, you overwhelm him. It's six people.
Greater than your six.
Yes.
That's what you're saying, and I respectfully disagree. It's a numbers game, in my opinion, and it's 6-on-1.
I don't think you're playing – I mean, then you can say that about any NFL running back who's going up against four guys. And you can say, well, numbers say that four guys that are just as big as this guy should be able to tackle him, right?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't –
It doesn't always happen.
Like, there's better
– How many times do four NFL defensive backs converge on the same running back at a time? Literally never.
And if
you're telling me like an NFL running back is going to break four tackles at the exact same time?
But your guys aren't going to be all punching and kicking at the exact same
time. Yeah, that's literally what I've been saying.
But that just isn't logical.
How? How is that not logical? Because we're just going to swarm him.
It's six on one.
Okay, but you would say that if there's one running back and there are six defenders lined up, you would say, oh, well, we would all just swarm them at once. But that isn't how it necessarily always goes down. Like, that's not how it works.
That would be the strategy.
Okay,
you don't get what he's saying. He's saying that's not exactly how it always happens. You would think, oh, yeah, I have two linebackers on my linebacker.
Not always, but it still could happen, which is what I'm saying.
You're talking about one of the best to ever do it in McGregor.
No disrespect.
No, I know. I'm just saying you can't say that a guy that's 5'8", 155, his same height, his same build, who doesn't do any training that he does, who's yeah. never taken a punch, who's never thrown a punch, I don't care if you have eight of them, then it might still be a win by McGregor. Like, six is not
– I just disagree. Like, it's okay. six people. It's well, six it's six able-bodied individuals against Conor McGregor.
Okay, one of the deadliest humans ever.
It's still 6-on-1.
Okay.
And that's where it's going to have to leave it.
Okay.
Thursday starts what, in my mind, is the most anticipated NFL draft in recent memory. Not necessarily because of the talent in the draft, but in my personal belief, because I'm just bored out of my mind as a sports fan, and I need some new sports content. What about you guys? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, just like what you said, having had sports in a while, and just the fact that they're doing it on, like, Zoom or whatever platform they're using. And
how that totally went horribly yesterday, apparently.
Well, the Bengals had their mic on mute.
Did they?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
So they had their thing on mute, so that's why that was bad. But, yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a fun couple days for the sports world.
What about you, Steve?
I think it's something that is coming at the right time. And I mean, it's always the same time, but I think it's happening during quarantine, which is going to be, it's going to have a lot of people tune in, and it's going to be a really anticipated draft because a lot of teams need a lot of new pieces, and there's a lot of good players in this draft, and it'll be interesting to see with the new format and just see how things go and who takes who and just the overall feedback that the fans give about watching the draft. And
yeah, it should be interesting because they usually boo Goodell when he walks the podium, but it's going to be interesting to see how they try and figure that out. Maybe there's just a Twitter thread of just people booing or something. That'd be interesting. One of the most interesting things that I see when I look at the draft is the quarterbacks, more specifically, Joe Burrow out of LSU, Tua Tagovailoa out of Alabama, Justin Herbert out of Oregon, and Jordan Love out of Utah State. Well, that's just – and then obviously the wide receiver class is deeper than deep.
Yeah.
And we'll get more into that later when we talk about the Packers. But just initially, what are your guys' thoughts on quarterbacks?
I'm a big fan of Burrow. Just extremely accurate. He completed, I think it was like 76% of his passes. And it's not like he was just dinking and dunking. That's a lot of deep shots. I know, like, he had great weapons, but he also was just throwing absolute lasers on target, on time. He's great in the pocket. He moves extremely well inside the pocket. He's mobile enough to get outside the pocket. He anticipates throws well. He can read defenses. I think he's legit. I think he's every bit of a number one pick as you want.
Yeah, I agree. I think Burrow's a for sure hit. I think Burrow's going to be really good in the league. And I'm going to be honest, I was not big on Tua at the beginning of the season. I didn't think he was going to be that good of a pro, but after watching him and going throughout the year.
Does the injury concern you at all?
I mean, it has some concerns, but I mean, I think he's going to rehab it back to the point where he's going to get back to where he was, if not a little bit stronger, because he's going to have more focus on his legs and areas around it to protect him.
Okay. I like Tua. I think he's a quality quarterback and definitely top three, with Jordan Love being a clear fourth.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect to Jordan Love.
But it's pretty clear cut.
But Tua's hip does concern me, just, and not that he can't fully recover, but just the hip is so crucial to the way you move, not just as a quarterback, but in the way you run and the way you really do anything in terms of movement that requires the whole body. Plus, in the event that he re-injures it, you could have a serious, serious problem. With that being said, Joe Burrow is far and away the best quarterback in the draft. And I'm not a religious person, but I am praying he doesn't end up in Cincinnati.
It's pretty surefire.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it is a pretty surefire surefire selection at this point. What about Justin Herbert? Us Wisconsin fans saw him play in the Rose Bowl. And, you know, honestly, I've been on Justin Herbert for a few years now. A couple years back, he was my dark horse Heisman candidate. But I like the guy. But
I'm with you. I think he's a good quarterback, and I watched a lot of Pac-12 games just being out on the West Coast this year, and I really got to see him play for a majority of the season. Got to watch a lot of his games. And I think he's a solid quarterback, and I think he can fit into an NFL team. He's not going to be outstanding. I don't think he's going to be a generational talent, but I don't know if anybody's saying that.
Right. I don't think they are.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't think they're saying that, but I think he'll make a solid pro. He can make some throws. He's accurate. I like him.
Good player. I think he is the most overrated player in this draft. I think
why is that?
Well, for one, he was a starter. He started 4 years, and I've watched last couple of days. You know, I'm pretty bored and stay up late. I've watched these clips, well, not even clips, videos, 40 minutes long, where this guy breaks down every single throw that he makes from certain games. He's not all that accurate, honestly. He doesn't anticipate throws. This season, he threw a screen pass one out of every four throws. What that tells me is that his coaching staff doesn't trust him enough to sit back in the pocket, make reads throughout the entire course of the game. Sure, he can do it one out of every four times, but he's throwing a bunch of screens, and off the screens, he's throwing pump and goes to guys that could be wide open downfield on a fake bubble go route because they're just cheating up because he's thrown a screen pass last three times.
You can say that a lot of pros, but is like that Rodgers and Brady, like,
is that not Mario Cristobal's offense?
I'm not
saying it is or isn't, but like it's not his decision what he does.
Yeah, like, but if you have that type of quarterback, like I would expect you to throw not a screen on every four plays,
but
you can make
it
reads
works.
And actually throw the
ball. It'd be one thing if he was winning, if he went 4-8 every year, but I mean, we all saw him go beat the Badgers in the Rose Bowl this year, and he won a lot of football games as a college football quarterback.
Like, you don't want to fix something that's not broken.
Right.
Like, and the thing about that system is, like, why change it for one guy when next year's quarterback, like, I don't know who they're bringing in, but next year's quarterback might not be able to make any long, deep throws.
Yeah.
And they might have to rely on
that. Like, I mean, they had Mariota. It was a different coach, obviously. But, I mean, you had him in, and, he's not even starting quarterback anymore in the NFL. So, I mean, maybe – and I'm not saying it was set up like when Herbert came in, that's how it was. But I mean, it was working for him. And I mean, like Steve was saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think from a football IQ standpoint, he's pretty solid. I think he can make the throws if he really needs to. Cause I mean, you don't go and win the Rose Bowl. You don't win a whole lot of football games.
He didn't do anything really throwing the ball.
Okay. Well, he still found ways to win football games.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think
it's not like he picked the Badger part.
Yeah, no, he didn't. But I don't think you can knock him for the offensive system he's in. And, like, I don't think – like, I think you're going to have to wait to see how – like, what system he gets put in on an NFL team to see if he fits that system and see if he can mold into that system.
Yeah, I mean –
because you can't say, oh, he throws a lot of screen passes. Like, he doesn't make throws downfield when that's just their offense.
Yeah. And it's going to be because a lot of people have him going to the Chargers right now, who obviously had Phillip Rivers last year, and Phillip Rivers is not a guy to go tuck it and run. So in that aspect, I kind of see him as just like a more mobile Phillip Rivers. Like, I didn't think Phillip Rivers was a guy that was going to go light you up for a million yards. I mean, he still could, and he still did it a few times. But he was just a solid option. I mean, he started how many years in – San Diego, which is now LA, and their new uniforms, by the way, are really nice. Other than that, I mean, what do you think of Tua, Reagan?
Tua, I have mixed feelings about Tua. I think Tua will either be like elite, like Russell Wilson type, top seven, like an elite quarterback in the league, or I think he will just be a flame out, a guy that can't stay healthy. Like, he hasn't stayed healthy once in his, he's been injury prone at Alabama. Maybe he doesn't come all the way back from his injury, or just the fact that he could be a byproduct of playing with four guys that could go in the first round. Jerry Jeudy, elite route runner. Henry Ruggs is extremely fast. Devontae Smith will be a first round pick next year. Jalen Waddle will probably be a first round pick. Like, he's playing with otherworldly talent. Yeah. And some people think he could be a byproduct of the system. I think he'll either be like legit, really, really good, and make like an NFL franchise for 10, 15 years, or he'll just be bottom of the league tier quarterback and just not ever pan out.
Yeah, I think it is certainly a big deal playing for Alabama, playing for the coaching staff and the talent that you have at Alabama. I mean, this year he played 9 games, his touchdown interception ratio was 33-3, but at the same time, like you were saying, he's got Henry Ruggs, he's got Jalen Waddle there, he's got all those guys that you – and it seemed like for a portion of the time, you'd send a guy on a 15-yard in and he'd throw it to him, the guy would catch it, just outrun him. So from a talent perspective, he can make the throws, but, I mean, is he going to have the guys that can catch it and run kind of thing? He did complete 72% of his passes, which, I mean, you still have to be able to sit back there and throw it. But being at Alabama definitely does help him, which leads me into our fourth quarterback, Jordan Love, from Utah State, who obviously doesn't get the name recognition as the prior three, playing at a small school like Utah State, but a guy that a lot of people are high on.
Yeah. Really good athlete.
Yeah.
Like really good intangibles.
For sure.
And I think that's his biggest upside. I think he's a guy that pro teams look at him and say, well, we've seen flashes of what he can be in college, but he wasn't consistently. He threw a lot of interceptions this last year, and he hasn't been a polished quarterback by any means, but he also has traits that no NFL team can teach.
Right.
And I think that's his biggest weapon, is that teams look at him and say, there's raws here, and we can turn him into possibly a franchise quarterback.
Right, right. From an arm talent and from an arm talent and a mobility standpoint, he's definitely has it. But he just needs to improve his decision making, as you said, with the interceptions, his accuracy and his timing, where he lacks and he's behind the other three quarterbacks ahead of him, clearly. So in that aspect, he just needs time to develop. So I don't really see him like stepping in and leading an offense right now, but in 2 or 3 years for sure.
I'm pretty high on Jordan Love. Like you guys touched on, arm strength has it, mobility has it. Like you make all the throws. Last year, I mean, if you just looked at it without like actually looking at it, sure, his season didn't look that great. But he got a new head coach, so had to learn a brand new system. He only was returning one other guy with him on offense. And if you go through his 17 interceptions, he had 3 Hail Mary picks. He had 4 picks where the receivers just play at Utah State and have stones in his hands, dropped off their hands, went to the other team. And then he had 2 that got batted down at the line, which like, okay, sure. But some of those are kind of fluky, like whatever. So he went like, sure, he did throw a lot of picks, but if you fully dive into the numbers, it's not as bad as it looks. I just think him and Herbert are both guys that I think need to sit a year for sure, and then they could come in to a place. I just think he will be a lot better than Herbert, just because like the screen thing just is, that's absurd to me. Like 25, one out of every throws that.
But with Herbert, it's not his fault though. Like you keep coming back.
If you look at game tape and he tries to make reads, he doesn't make a whole lot of
great. But that's a different argument than what you're saying. Like
one every 4 passes. Doesn't trust him enough to and make consistent reads. There will be a guy open. He'll throw it late. He'll totally miss a guy that's flooding a zone that's wide open. He won't throw it, or he'll throw it way too early. Now let him clear over the line. Like he just. And he's been a 4-year starter at a school, and he still is making these simple, like, high-level quarterback decisions that I just – like, a guy that I'm taking in the top of the first round, I don't want my quarterback making those mistakes that Herbert makes.
Right, right, for sure. Okay, that leads me into my next question. You as a Patriots fan, you have Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham calling the shots. Well, Bill Belichick's obviously calling the shots, but – playing quarterback for you. So what pick do they have? 23. So if Jordan Love's still sitting there at 23rd, are you scooping him up right away?
I mean, sure, I'd like to have him, but as a fan, what I really want to have happen is us build, say we take a linebacker, Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma, I think I would love to have. Take a linebacker, take another position of need, and then like just I hope we're bad this year, where we win about five games, get a top five pick. Looking forward to next year. You got Trevor Lawrence, you got Justin Fields, and some of the teams that will also be bad won't necessarily need quarterbacks. Washington may not need one. The Giants may not need one. All we are really competing with would be like Jacksonville at that point, or maybe we could trade them next year. So I'm hoping we stay put at quarterback. Stidham is horrible. We win 4 to 5 games. We get a top pick, and we draft one of those two or three big names next year from the draft. That's what I'm hoping for.
So building on the Patriots, your big guy that left, number 12 out of the University of Michigan, Tom Brady, is now headed down south to Tampa along with Rob Gronkowski. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I mean, as a huge Brady fan, I couldn't be happier for Tom. I think he's in a place that he wants to play in. He's in a just brand new environment. He's kind of sick of New England. He's with a load of weapons now, probably the best he's ever had in his career. He gets to bring his good friend Gronk back. I think that'll juice things up. Their defense will be much improved, considering Tom Brady's not going to turn the ball over 35 times like Winston did. So I think Bucs will be a really good team.
Yeah, I really like the Gronk move. I just like the story of bringing Gronk back to play with Brady. Like, I just think that's a cool football story.
It
like,
is for
friends.
Sure. Yeah.
Like he's coming back out of retirement to play with Brady in Tampa. Like,
and he can still play too.
Oh yeah,
they're not bringing him down there to sit on the bench.
No, and it's gonna be really fun to see them just having fun playing in warm weather, like. Tom not looking frail in the 30-degree windy weather. Like, I think it'll just be really fun to watch them play. And they'll be a team that I actually want to watch and not just flip off the TV.
Yeah, right, for sure. It should make that a really interesting division with the Saints as well. Let me ask you about the wide receivers, because as I alluded to earlier, wide receiver class is very, very strong. So, Reagan, who's the best wide receiver in the draft?
It's toss-up between CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. I think those are two guys that you can slot in as your number one receiver for 10 years, and you're totally okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a toss-up for me. Like, whoever – I do think a lot of teams are going to get a lot of good wide receivers this year that are going to be able to become either number ones or really, really good number twos for teams that already have a good receiving core.
Right, like – our beloved Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean,
And that's what I'm looking forward to, because the Packers have Devontae Adams, who, in my opinion, is at a minimum a top five wide receiver in the league.
Consensus
top five there. But what we really kind of lack is a guy to line up on the other side of the ball or really anywhere, or not the other side of the ball, the other side of the line of
just have a number two option.
Yeah, have a number two option. Like,
I mean,
so we went in.
Valdez Scantling. He's saying he's going to be the next Randy Moss.
Yeah, he did. Like, he did say he was a top five receiver all time.
Yeah.
I would just love for him to show an ounce of that.
I would love to see him catch more than four balls in a game.
I mean, we went and got Devin Funchess, which,
yeah.
I mean, fine. But I Devin Funchess isn't a number two.
No.
You know what I mean? So go get a number two.
Yeah.
And that's where I really like Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame.
In the first round?
Eventually. I would like him in green and gold. In fact, I was sitting on my couch watching the Camping World Bowl, and I texted my roommate. I was like, turn on the TV, watch number 83. He's going to look really good in green and gold next year. So it would be really cool if we ended up with him. He's just got the size and the ability to really make things happen, and not that he even needs to. We just need a number two to take the pressure off Devontae Adams, because teams just key on him, and you know Aaron's either that or just kind of toss it to anybody and have them drop it.
For our entertainment portion of this podcast, we're going to give our reactions to the much-anticipated Last Dance Michael Jordan documentary that came out, episodes 1 and 2 on this past Sunday. Steve, what are your thoughts?
Oh, it was unbelievable. As soon as it came on, I was tuned in. I loved all 2 hours of it, and I feel like I could have watched all 10 if it would have just come out I could have watched them all in a row. And in fact, they were rerunning it on ESPN about 2 hours later, and my TV was still on ESPN, and I just found myself watching it again. It was that good.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was really cool for me. Excuse me. It was really cool for me because I'm not a huge NBA guy, but I'm a really big like ESPN films guy. Like, I'll sit down on my couch and watch so many of those, and I have since they started, like 30 for 30s. So it was really cool to get like an inside look into the relationship between even like Jerry Krause and Scottie Pippen and the whole morale of the team and the whole relationships between all the players. I just thought it was really well done, and I can't wait for the next 8 episodes.
Yeah, I think, I'm a huge Jordan guy. He's my favorite athlete of all time. Since this was announced in, like, 2018, I've had this kind of marked as something I really want to watch and enjoy, and it lived up to it for me. I mean, I think it was fantastic, like Brooke said. I mean, I just love looking in, like, the inside, seeing, like, what it's like to, like, from the front office down. And just it sheds light on, like, everyone thinks that Jordan had it so easy and he just cruised through his 6 titles and everything. But, I mean, he really showed, like, it wasn't easy. And just the internal battles that he had to face was just astronomical that season in particular. And I'm glad that it wasn't just, say, released on Netflix, because I'd be done with it. Like, I would have, like Steve said, I would have sat down for 10 hours, watched it all straight through, probably not left wherever I was watching it. And then boom, I'm done watching it. Like, a year and a half of me anticipating it was gone in 10 hours. This way, I space it out. I get to reflect on each episode in its own. And I think I can just take the documentary, like, in easier and better.
I think one of the coolest parts is, I think it was Adam Schefter. They were asking about the NFL draft on ESPN. And then after I think it was Scott Van Pelt. He was like, what did you think about The Last Dance? Like, I know you're an NFL guy.
Yeah.
But, like, what did you think watching him when you were growing up? And he's like, well, I thought the coolest part was that my 11-year-old daughter, who never watches NBA, has never seen Michael Jordan play, sat down on my couch next to me for 2 hours, didn't move, didn't look at her phone, and was into Michael Jordan and was into it like it was happening today. And it didn't matter that it was realistically – almost 25, 30 years ago, like almost 30 years ago when part of the documentary was being shown. Like, it didn't matter. It took away the age gap for people to appreciate Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot more people in our age group are going to start to see Jordan for what he really was and appreciate him just a little bit more than what they did.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing too. Like for us, we were all born. I couldn't tell you when he retired, but none of us actually remember him playing. Not that you'd see him, not see him as a Bulls player, but I mean, he's the owner of the Hornets now, or he's got this major shoe brand which is worth $1 billion. But he's the greatest basketball player of all time, and I didn't really like, and I understood that, but I never sat there and was like, wow, you know what? He would just go out every single night and be like, I'm just going to beat the crap out of you on the basketball court. He's just going to put his foot in your mouth kind of thing and just crush you.
He gave a really good look into his mentality. And, I mean, it got me fired up.
Yeah,
it made me want to go and run through a wall after I watched it. I was like, man, I want to just go out there and compete after this coronavirus stuff ends. Like, Jordan, it just put everything in perspective. Like, wow, like he didn't take – how big he was, he never took that for granted. He was never like, oh, I can take this game off load management. He said, what was that? Didn't even cross his mind. Like I really liked when he said, or when somebody said that Michael treated it as he knew that somebody in the crowd had never seen him play.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, wanted to give them a show, wanted to go out there and be his best.
Yeah, and even like the whole part of them going to Paris, like when NBA teams go abroad, like they're not selling out arenas,
no.
You know, versus like they're the whole Chicago Bulls team is walking around like they're the Beatles or they're the hottest band on the block. There was a reporter asking him for autographs while he's like stretching or just standing in the hallway. Like there's truly nothing like it in the sports world, which I thought was really, and it was really cool to see.
It just makes me wish that we could have seen him play. Like, I just wish he was in the league today, or wish that I was like this age during the mid 90s to see this whole run and this all unfold and be able to really remember it. Like, it's just, cause I even have been talking to my dad about like asking him if he remembers like Jordan playing. And he's like, the one thing I do remember is when he got his first contract, that was like $25 million per year. And everybody kept saying, oh, he's overpaid. My dad was like, I think he's the one guy in the NBA who's underpaid, because every stadium, when they normally sell 5,000 tickets, are selling 18,000. They're selling out just to see Jordan play. And he's making basketball known worldwide.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize what he did for the game of just basketball.
Right. There's really, like, you talk about like big men changing the game back in the day, but there's no player that's come into the game and changed it just because of how absolutely unreal they are. You know what I mean? Like Jordan was the only guy to do it in the way I see it. What about Reagan?
Anything? Yeah, no, he definitely made the game. He took the game global and made it known. And I mean, that's why there's so many Chinese fans, and like in Europe, a lot of fans now are like, Jordan made all that possible with just how great and how big of an icon he was. And I just can't wait for these next 8 episodes.